Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. If I could just remind people, although I don't do it as well as Miriam does, but if I can remind people to turn their mobile phones off at the beginning, that would be helpful, I think, for everybody. Welcome. I think we're going to have some fun today. In case you didn't think Pesach could be fun, I promise you it can. And what I'd like to look at now that we're in the run-up to Pesach and we're in the matzah mood, I'd like to focus on a topic which is becoming bigger and bigger every year, which is the issue of celiacs and gluten-free people. I would bet that probably 25 years ago, if I'd have asked you, how many gluten-free people do you know, you probably never even heard of it. But now, if I ask you, do you know anyone who is gluten-free or celiac? It is a very, very common thing now. They think that 1 in 100 people is a fully celiac, has celiac disease. We'll talk about that in a minute. And there are many, many more people than that who, for whatever reason, have allergies or feel that it's healthier not to eat gluten. And this time of year, when we move towards matzah and achilas matzah, this causes some level of strain and stress. I don't know about you, but sometimes it feels that we eat a lot of matzah over Pesach. And what I want to look at today is specifically how much matzah we really need to eat and what are the solutions for people who really can't eat classical wheat matzah in the way that we've been eating for really thousands of years. What are their options? So let's go through this. It's quite a big sheet. We're not going to look at every single source. On the first page, I've just outlined some background on celiac disease and gluten-free diets. I think this is probably familiar to many people. Celiac disease is an autoimmune disease, which affects, as I said, a large number of people, gives them very significant gastrointestinal problems, can really be extremely uncomfortable, and can in fact cause long-term and in some cases irreparable damage to the small intestines. What basically happens is there's a reaction in these people to the gluten. The gluten is a protein which is found in wheat and barley and rye in large amounts, to some degree less in spelt, and oats is a whole subject which we'll deal with soon. When these people eat that protein, they have a reaction to that, and that response, that autoimmune response, releases antibodies which start to actually destroy the small intestine. And as I said, that can be quite serious, and it takes a long time for a real celiac to get over an episode of eating gluten, even by accident. I mean, it doesn't matter to the body whether you eat it by accident or not by accident, but I'm saying even though gluten-free people try hard not to, sometimes they do make mistakes, and this can be a very significant long-term problem. It's not immediately life-threatening, but it can lead to a slightly increased risk of early death and cancers in years to come. That's a celiac issue. But then I think we have to differentiate between three types of people. There are real celiacs who have this medical issue, which is can be diagnosed, you can do a blood test, and you can find out if you are a celiac. Then there are people who are gluten-free. And that's a little bit different, because many times those people have realized, and I actually am one of those people, that over the years I've realized that I am allergic to wheat, or at least something in wheat doesn't agree with me. For a number of years ago, I was realized on Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays, I felt very unwell. By Wednesdays, I felt a bit better. By Thursdays, I was okay. And Friday, I was great. And then it all started again the next week. And the only two options were I was either allergic to Shabbos, which was one idea, or I realized it was the challah. The challah was actually causing this problem, because I didn't eat much bread during the week. And clearly there are a larger and larger number of people who have different types of allergic reaction. Some to wheat and some a little bit less to salt, etc. And I brought you some information on that. There are different theories as to why this is an issue now that wasn't an issue 25 years ago. Is it the type of wheat? Is it genetic modification to the wheat? I'm not getting into all of that, because we can talk about that, and I'm not really an expert in any way on that. But I think there are a large number of people, I know there are, who are gluten-free for non-celiac reasons, and that's a separate group. And then there's a third group, who are people who really don't have any health issue with gluten, but they've kind of jumped on the gluten-free bandwagon, and they feel maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, that they're healthier if they don't eat gluten, and it's a bit of a fad sometimes. As I say, there are different groups of people. But with some people, they just prefer not to eat gluten. They have a different halachic status, if you like, when we get into the whole issue of matzah. It's important, though, to realize there are really different groups of people with different issues. Let's get into the makorot. Go over to page 2, please. A gluten-free person, or a celiac, faces a number of halachic challenges on a regular basis. First of all, and I'm not going to go through all of these today, we're really talking about matzah, but on Shabbos, when you make kiddush, you have to have kiddush b'makom suda. This is something that affects me every single week. A gluten-free person cannot eat 95% of what is on the table at a kiddush. If you think about it, there are crackers, and there are danishes, and there is Yerushalmi kugel, and all of this is completely off-limits to people who are gluten-free. What are their options? How can they have kiddush b'makom suda?
Herring.
Herring is good. Herring is great, but you need to eat mazonot. That's the problem. You have, halakhically, you have to eat something which is mazonot, preferably in the place that you have here kiddush. I'm not getting into that. There are solutions, but that's one issue that that causes problems. If you can't, for whatever reason, eat challah, and you have a Shabbos meal with the challah, then you have to think about the fact you have to make brachas on all of the food during the meal, because the challah usually exempts the food, and if you're not eating challah, then it won't. What do you make hamotzi on? If you can make hamotzi, can you get spelt bread? Can you get oat bread? Does that help? Eating at Suda Shlishit, people don't realize this is a bit of a challenge, meaning that you can start a Suda Shlishit and then continue eating into the night. There's no problem with that. You don't have to make Havdalah the minute the Shabbos goes out. But that is only if you washed for bread. Then you can continue to eat into Motzei Shabbat. But if you didn't, if you just had a little bit of a bit of tuna, a bit of corn, whatever it was, then really you have to stop eating soon after Shkia, because that's the Zman for Havdalah, and there's an Issur to eat before Havdalah. How does a person who is not washing deal with that, and can, how far can they eat towards Shkia? This is an issue, or after Shkia, that has affected many people. Eruv Chatzeres, Eruv Tavshilin, this is meant to be based on bread which is edible by the people relying on the Eruv. Do they have a problem? Can a gluten-free person not use an Eruv? They can use an Eruv, don't worry about that, but I'm saying this is an issue which has to be thought through. Matzah on Seder night we're looking at, eating bread in the sukkah on first night sukkahs, eating bread at other meals, etc. What brachas to make on gluten-free foods? People don't often think about this. There's a lot of gluten-free foods which look as though they should be mazonas, but actually when you get into it, it's really shahakol, because they're made from all sorts of weird and wonderful flours, reconstituted, etc. Last night I was eating rice noodles. What is the brocha on rice noodles? Well, we make brocha on rice mazonas, but now rice noodles are not made from rice. They're ground down into flour, reconstituted, etc. That is a whole issue. And then there are all sorts of exotic gluten-free products that people look for, like flax seed oil and sansum gum and stuff. And how do you get the kashrus right on these? Where do you get them from? These are all challenges, halakhically, which are all they can all be dealt with. But the one I'm looking at today and focusing on is matzah. Because that is the inyana diyoma. How does a gluten-free person or a celiac deal with matzah on Seder night? So let's have a look at the options. When do we have to eat matzah? So according to the Torah, on a pshat level, it sounds like we have to eat matzah for 7 solid days. And for some people, they are really 7 solid days, and solid may be the right word for it, anyway. But have a look at number 3. Shivat yamim matzot tochelu. Eat matzah for 7 days, says the Torah. Ach b'yom harishon tashbitu, on the first day you have to get rid of the so'or mivatechi, get rid of the leaven from your houses. This is Erev Pesach. Ki kol ochel chametz v'nichrasa ha'nefesh ahim yitzvah. Generally speaking, the mitzvah to eat matzah comes together in the pasuk with the prohibition on eating chametz. As we see here, 7 days eat matzah, but make sure you get rid of the chametz and do not eat any chametz. 10 times in the Torah says, eat matzah for 7 days. Have a look at number 4. Rabbi Shimon's position in the Sifrei is that indeed matzah should be eaten for 7 days. He says here, Amar Rabbi Shimon, number 4 in the Sifrei, Talmud Loima, the Torah says, Loisa chalalav chametz, shivas yamim tochalalav matzahs. Don't eat chametz, but 7 days eat matzah. That's the pasuk in Devarim. Echehu bekum echol matzah, harihu bebal betoichol chametz. Whenever you can't eat chametz, that's when you should be eating matzah. Ve'eche ein bekum echol matzah. And when you're not meant to be eating matzah, ein bebal betoichol chametz. There's no problem with eating chametz. Chametz and matzah match each other throughout. And the shita of Rabbi Shimon is always understood to be that, yes, for 7 days you eat matzah. And that actually is the custom of the Samaritans, of the Shomronim, who claim not to have access to the oral law or not interested in the oral law. That's a whole discussion in and of itself. I once went to visit the Shomronim on Sukkot and went to someone's house and asked them all sorts of interesting questions as to what they do and what they don't do. that's a whole different discussion. Okay, they kept telling me I had to ask the Kohen Gadol because they didn't know the answer. They have a Kohen Gadol. The next time I'll go see the Kohen Gadol, Bli Meida. So the Samaritans eat for 7 days, and the Karaites also, there are different customs, but many of the Karaites also eat matzah for 7 days straight. And we'll see that comes into the halachic system as well. However, the problem is one posek out of all of the psukim says eat matzah for 6 days. Number five. Sheshet yamim tochal matzot. Eat matzah for 6 days. Uva yom ha-shvi'i, and on the seventh day, atzeret la-Hashem, it's a yom tov, Hashem elokecha lo ta'aseh melacha. This is a special chag, which of course we call shvi'i shel Pesach. Now from this posek, it sounds like matzah is 6, not 7 days. There is another posek that specifically refers to the first night of Pesach. Number six, a different posek in Shmot. B'rishon ba'arba atzah yom l'chodesh, on the 14th day of Nisan, ba'erev tochlu matzot. In the evening you must eat matzah, ad yom echad yisrim l'chodesh ba'erev, until the 21st, but it specifies eat matzah on Seder night and then go on for 7 other days. I think it's quite well known that according to the halachic system, the way that all these psukim come together is as follows. That on the first night of Pesach there is an obligation to eat matzah, and for the rest of Pesach there is an option to eat matzah, but no obligation to eat matzah. Looking at number 7 briefly, I'm doing this quite quickly because this is well known I think to most people, says the Mechilta, Shivat Yamim Matzah Tochelu, La'asot Harishon Chova. This makes the first night of Pesach obligatory, V'shar Yamim Rishut, but the rest of Pesach is Rishut. What does Rishut mean? It's up to you. You want to eat, you don't want to eat. Now, of course, there are separate mitzvahs on Shabbos, of Lechem Mishnah, on Chag of Lechem Mishnah, and of course you can't eat bread, so you're going to have to eat matzah, but that's going to be rabbinic, not on a Torah level. On a Torah level, the rest of Chag is Rishut. How do I know that the first day is obligatory, etc.? It goes on to say, Talmud Loma, Barishon, Ba'arba, Asayom, Lechodesh, Ba'erev, Tokla, Matzah. This pasuk that says, on the Seder night, specifically matzah, that clearly makes that first night Rishut. And that's what basically the Rambam paskens. If you go over to number 8, the Rambam, this is all so far very uncontroversial. The Rambam says, mitzvah ase min haTorah, there is a positive Torah mitzvah, lechol matzah, to eat matzah when? Beleil chamisha asar, on the night of the 15th, and only that night. Shneamar be'erev tochlu matzah. Aval b'shar haregel, the rest of Pesach, achilat matzah reshut, eating matzah is an option, it's not an obligation. Ratza ochel matzah, if you want, eat matzah. Ratza ochel orez, if you want, eat rice, or dochen, or millet, or kleot, or nuts, or perot, or fruit. Now, of course, this opens up the entire sugya of kidneyot, which we talked about last year. If you remember, we've had 2 years now of matzah discussions. Last year we talked about kidneyot and gebroch. But the Rambam clearly has no problem with you eating rice, and millet and peas and beans during Pesach. Aval b'leil chamisha asar bilvad chova. Only on the 15th in the evening it's an obligation to eat matzah. U'mishachal kezayit, all you need is one kezayit, yatsi yidei chova. You've done your bit. We'll see in a minute how much do we actually eat on Seder night. It's a little bit more than a kezayit, actually a lot more. But says the Rambam, all you need is one kezayit. The rest of Pesach is an option. Now, option is an interesting word. Because the Chizkuni already in the Middle Ages picks up in number 9 that it sounds from the Chumash that you really should be eating matzah the rest of Pesach as well, even though it's not an obligation. Look at what he says, very interesting wording, number 9. I could force a little bit and say, there are things in the Torah that you get reward for doing, and you get a punishment if you don't do them. Kagon, for example, matzah b'layla harishon. On the first night of Pesach, that's the reward punishment issue. The yeshachad varim she'ein makavlim schar ba'asiyasim, but there are other things that you do not get any reward for doing them. V'onesh k'she'ein osim otam, and you don't get any punishment for not doing them. Kagon, for example, matzah milel rishon ve'elech, matzah for the rest of Pesach. U'mikol makom, nevertheless, matzah shivas yamim matzah tochelu ksev. When it comes to matzah, it does say eat it for 7 days. Kolaymar, he says, and I think this means, im achal matzah kol shivas hayamim, if you do eat matzah the rest of Pesach, kiyem hapasuk ze. What does that mean? Kiyem hapasuk ze. You kept this verse. Shel Shivas Yamim Matzah Tachir. What do you mean you kept this verse? He seems to be saying that there, even if it's not halakhically required, and even if you don't get a reward in some sense, not even a mitzvah, there is an idea of keeping the verses and doing what the verses say, even if it's not technically a halakhic thing. So he seems to say that there's something positive, whatever that is, about eating matzah the rest of Pesach. And as I think is well known, the Vilna Gaon takes it one stage further, and he basically says, in number 10, Shivas Yamin Toichal Matzahs, it does say eat for 7 days, Kol Shiva Mitzvah. He actually goes one stage further, and he says there is indeed a Torah mitzvah to eat the whole of Pesach, but not an obligation. It's a mitzvah. It's not an obligation. The Eina Korela Rishut Ela Lagabe Laila Rishona. It's only called Rishut, optional, when compared to the first night, Shehi Chovah, which is obligatory. Umitzvah Lagabe Chovah Rishut Korela. And when you compare a mitzvah with an obligation, then you can call it relatively a Rishut. Sa'afalpik mitzvah doraisa. It says very clearly, it's a mitzvah doraisa to eat matzah as much as you can during Pesach. The kain pirshu, and that's what it means when it says yontif ein tarich ot, because yontif you don't wear tefillin, men don't wear tefillin and yontif because yontif themselves are a special sign. Tefillin are a sign, yontif is a sign, it's like Shabbos is a sign. What's the sign of yontif? Pesach is matzah, sukkah is the sukkah. Va'oid kamarayas. The Vilna Gaon was very into eating matzah, says here. Kol Shiva, all 7 days, ube Yontif achran haya oichel suda shlishi. And on the last day of Yontif, on Shlish Shal Pesach, he would eat a special shalosh sudas. Afal pisha loy haya oichel suda shlishi, shalosh sudas b'shar Yontif. Even though he never ate the third meal on any other chag, but mipnei chavivas, mitzvahs, achilas matzah, because how much he loved to eat matzah, shezmana hoylech lo, and the time for eating matzah was running out, because we call this Suda Shel Mashiach. My wife calls this that the men can stay in shul and longer and not have to come home and clear up and get changed back over after Pesach, okay? But I'm sure that's not true. And therefore the Rambam would eat Suda Shel Mashiach in order to extend a little bit the mitzvah doraisa of eating matzah. Now, it goes without saying that even if you hold like the Vilna Gaon that there is a real mitzvah to eat matzah all 7 days, just an obligation on the first, if you are a celiac or a gluten-free person, you clearly don't need to. That's for sure. You're really only talking about the first night. Okay, you'll have to work out what to do on Shabbos and Chag in terms of Lech and Mishnah, but that's the same as every Shabbos and Chag. It's not a specific Pesach issue. And therefore, it goes without saying, as I said, needless to say, that someone who is a celiac doesn't have to go through, certainly doesn't have to go through, even a gluten-free person, the discomfort and maybe even danger of trying to eat extra matzah that they don't need to. The Tzitz Eliezer in number 11 that I brought you here, I'm not going to read now, but he says that he knows that there are people who will only eat matzah on the first night, and they won't eat matzah for the rest of Pesach. Why? He says for some people it's because they don't want to look like the Karaites. Very interesting. And he says, I hear that, even though they're missing out, meaning they don't even wash on Shabbos. And they don't even wash on Shavuot or Pesach. They won't eat matzah after the first night because they don't want it to look like the interpretation of the Karaites. He says, I hear that. It's not mainstream, but I hear that. But then he says there are other people that won't eat matzah because they're scared that it might be chometz. If you think about it, the one thing that's most likely to be chometz is matzah. Yes. So in fact, that's one of the, we saw last year, the Chacham Tzvi was very against the minag of not eating kinyas. He said, halavai, he could remove that minag in Ashkenaz, because all people eat for 7 days is matzah, 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 and the one thing that is most likely to be chometz is matzah, if it's not made properly, if it's made in a way which is not supervised properly. He said, halavai, that people should eat rice and beans and peas, there's no way they can be chometz. Whereas matzah could be chometz. Okay, he didn't succeed in getting rid of kidneys, whatever, but he said, if you don't eat matzah for the rest of Pesach because you're worried about chometz, he says, the Torah wasn't given to malachim. You can't worry about things like that, and even though obviously people are concerned about chometz, you can go ahead and eat matzah. Fine. So the rest of Pesach, people can eat matzah if they want. Celiacs and gluten-free people probably won't, and that's fine. But what about Seder night? Let's go back now into Seder night. How much matzah do you actually have to eat on Seder night? So the Rambam said, what did he say? A kezayis. How big is a kezayis? That's next week's share. Okay? That's a whole story in and of itself. How the kazayis evolved from being something this big to something this big. We'll talk about that separately. But it's a kazayis. But actually, la halacha, it's preferably more than a kazayas. Let's take two Shulchan Aruchs, number 12 and 13. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Vayivarech HaMotzi, this is Seder night, make HaMotzi, Ve'al Achilas Matzah, and make a Bracha Al Achilas Matzah, Ve'achar Kav Yitzchiz Mehashlema, then you have to break the whole Matzah, Elyon, the top Matzah, Umeh Aprusa, and the middle broken Matzah. You take the top Matzah, you take the middle Matzah, Ve'ochlam Ve'haseber, and then you eat them leaning, Ve'yachad, okay, Kazayit, you eat them together, Kazayit Mikol Echad, a Kazayit from each Matzah. A kezayis for hamotzi and a kezayis for al achilas matzah. So that's already two kezayisim. Va'achakach yifak stat maro, then you'll take some maro. Va'achakach notel matzah, then you'll take some more matzah. Shlishi is the third matzah. Ubotzeim imanu v'korcha im amaro, and then you'll do korech. Va'ochlem b'yachad b'hatev, and then you'll eat that, another kezayis. So far we're up to three kezayisim. Two kezayisim for achilas matzah, and another kezayis for korech. And number 13, he goes on to say, Ola acha, yemer kol asuda, after you've eaten all of the meal, oichlim mimatza hashmura tachat hamatza, there's another matza hiding somewhere in an afikoman bag, okay, that you found, or you ransomed from your kids or grandchildren or whatever, kezayis, a fourth kezayis, that's four kezayisim. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Ula chabchila, and ideally, taisha yikach shnei zesim, you should eat two kezayisim from the afikoman, Echad zeichel a Pesach, one as a memorial for the Pesach, to remember the Pesach offering, ve'echad zeichel a matzah, and one to remember the matzah, hane'echelet imo, which was eaten then with the Pesach. So now we're up to five kezayisim. Four of them seem to be halachic, the two of them at the beginning, then korech, then afikoman, and the fifth one seems to be a chumrah, which is, he says, tov, it's good to eat an extra kezayis at the end of fifth. Okay, so now we're up to four or maybe five. However, everyone agrees that if you eat one, that is the basic Torah mitzvah. So you could turn around and say a celiac or someone who was in difficulty maybe should just stick to the one. And by the way, when should the celiac eat that one, if they're eating? For afikoma, not at the beginning. The Shulchan Aruch clearly says, number 14, Mi she'ein lo matzah mishumeret ele kezayit. If someone who only is able to have one kezayit of matzah on Seder night, not the four or five, Mavarech al achilas maro, they say, Al achilas maro at the beginning, the oichel and the maro, or kashigoyme sudata, when they get to the end of the meal, mevarech al achilas matzah, then they wash, they make hamotzi al achilas matzah, the oichel, and they eat a kazayis, this kazayis, the ain a toim akrab klum, and then they don't eat after that. So, someone who is only eating one kazayis, not the four or five, should be eating it at the end of the meal, so the afikoman, and only washing at the end. Fine. So where does that leave us? So somebody, bottom line, if they can only eat one kazayis, they can eat one kazayis and it can be at the end of the meal. But what about if you can't even eat a kazayis? Someone who is a celiac, who is a real celiac, really cannot eat a kazayis of matzah, even one kazayis of matzah. It could have long-term health issues. So what options do they have? And what options do other people who are not quite as seriously medically compromised, but still want to avoid the wheat or the gluten? What do they have? So I want to bring you four options and discuss these for the rest of the shiur. Option number one is, maybe they don't have to eat any matzah. Maybe they're exempt. And we have to ask ourselves, how sick do you need to become in order to say, I don't need to do this mitzvah because it's making me ill? Which is a very interesting general question, which we're going to examine now. So option number one is, maybe they don't have to bother. Option number two is, maybe they can find a non-gluten, a gluten-free matzah that will do instead. Now, wheat, barley, you can't get barley matzah anyway. Rye, maybe you can get rye matzah, but that won't help you. There's lots of gluten in all of those. Spelt, well, we'll see. Spelt does contain gluten, and celiacs, real celiacs, will not eat spelt, even though spelt does break down the gluten more easily than wheat. But oat matzah may be, to mix the metaphor, perhaps the Holy Grail. Meaning, maybe if we can find oat matzah, and really make oat matzah, that's going to solve the problem, because oats are in principle gluten-free. So we'll have to talk about oat matzah. A third option could be to mix the matzah, mix the flour, the wheat flour, with rice flour, and make a kind of wheat-rice combination. We'll talk about whether that's possible even. And the last option might be to just try and eat the smallest kazayis you possibly can, which is for next week. And even then, a celiac probably won't do that if that's really made from wheat. But let's have a look at the main issues here. How ill do you have to be to say, I don't have to do this anymore? So some issues are very simple. Number 15. If a person, God forbid, might die, they clearly don't have to do any mitzvah, which is positive mitzvah. Number 15. Haloi nitna mitzvahs v'Yisrael ela lichiyot bahem. Okay? Mitzvahs are only given to the Torah, to the Jewish people, says the Tosefta, to live by Shneemar, famous posik, asher yaseh otam ha'adam, v'chai bahem. A person has to live by them. V'chai bahem, v'lo sheyamut bahem. You have to live by mitzvahs, not die by mitzvahs. Ein kol davar oimid b'nei pikuach nefesh. No mitzvah will get in the way of pikuach nefesh. Chutz, me'avodah zara, gilui arayos, and shvichas damim. Meaning, you can't do the big three, as we know. We talked a little bit about that in other scenarios. We talked about organ donation. We talked a few weeks ago about cars, driverless cars, etc. But clearly on Seder night, nothing on Seder night is approaching Avodah Zorah, hopefully not, Gilui Arayos, or Shvichas Damim. You're talking about Achilas Matzah. Therefore, if a person would be in, God forbid, life-threatening danger, there's no question at all they would not have to eat a matzah. Celiacs are not in immediate danger of pikuach nefesh. And again, I'm not passing any shilas, and every person involved has to ask medical opinion and a halachic opinion and make an appropriate decision accordingly. But celiacs are not really in a pikuach nefesh situation, in the sense that it's not pikuach nefesh now. It's not lefaneinu. Pikuach nefesh doesn't mean that if I eat this, there's a long-term possibility that it might shorten my lifespan. Otherwise, all of us would be eating less fatty food and food that helps us put weight on, etc., because in the long term we all know that's not healthy, but that's not called pikuach nefesh, okay? So the celiac will be more dealing with something which is a little bit less, which is a chole she'ein bo sakana. What's a chole she'ein bo sakana? Someone who will really get sick, properly sick, but not life-threateningly sick. That will be a chole she'yesh bo sakana. So let's have a look at that level of illness, number 16. Says the Ramah in Hilchas Esrog, interestingly. Mi she'ein lo esrog, or shal mitzvah overis, someone who can't get hold of an esrog, or any other mitzvah which is coming up and will pass, if they don't get hold of it, they won't be able to do it. Ein tzarech levaz vezaleh hoin rab. They don't, how much money do you have to spend on an esrog? You can all go and watch your shpizin, okay, and talk about it. How much money do you have to spend on an esrog? You don't have to spend a fortune, hoin rab, says the Ramah, on an esrog. Kumosha amru, hamavazvez, and if, as they say, if you are going to spend money, al yivazez yote mechoymesh. Don't spend more than one-fifth of your life savings on any specific mitzvah. Afilu mitzvah overes, even a mitzvah which you will lose if you don't do it. V'davka mitzvah zafi, that's only a positive mitzvah. Avaloysa say, but if you're going to break a negative mitzvah, yitin kol mamoino kodem shiyavor. You should be prepared to lose all your money, he says, rather than break a negative mitzvah. Which is one reason, of course, why you can't break Shabbos to save money, because no amount of money, as it were, will justify breaking Shabbos. Whereas for a positive mitzvah, you don't have to spend all your money to do a positive mitzvah. So if you have, he says, if you have $1,000 in the bank, you don't have to spend more than 200, maybe 250, how you calculate a chonish, I'm not getting into that now, in order to do that mitzvah. Okay, so how does that help a celiac? What does that help us on this analysis? The answer is the Binyan Shlomo and a number of other posting. The Binyan Shlomo was of Shlomo HaKohen of Vilna, very important dayan in Vilna in the 19th century, said, look, if you don't have to spend money, then for most people, becoming sick is worse than spending money. So if you already don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money to do a mitzvah, then you don't have to make yourself ill either to do a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah. That wouldn't apply to a negative mitzvah. Maybe you would still need to become ill in that sense, but that's not relevant here. Eating matzah is a positive mitzvah, says the Binyan Shlomo. You don't have to eat matzah if it's going to make you sick, even if it's not life-threateningly sick. And this is passed by many, many people, including I brought here in number 17, the Tzitz Eliezer. Let's look at the Tzitz Eliezer, because I think he sells this out very well. Odot anashim hasovlim loyaleinu b'machalad hakaresek. People who suffer from this sickness of the gluten sickness, celiac, le'inyan achilas matzah pesach. What does he say to do? Allah, mikaven she'achilas daganim goremet nezek mitzaber lemay. Since this illness of celiac results in cumulative illness which affects the intestines, hinei benogei l'chol yimei pesach. When it comes to the rest of Pesach, v'adai she'peturim mile'echol matzah. For sure they don't have to eat matzah. Those 7 days that we talked about where the Vilna Gaon says there's a mitzvah, no, you don't have to eat matzah then. Afilu la'atzovim she'ika mitzvah le'echol maseh, even for those who say there's a mitzvah to eat maseh, b'chol shivat yamim, because this is going to make them sick. For sure, that's nothing to talk about. Just eat on Seder night. The Hariyeshan, b'chlal gam anashim b'riim, there are even healthy people, shemisibot shonot, that for different reasons, machmirim al atzman le'echol maseh rak b'hakazesim b'leil Seder. We saw. Because people don't want to look like the Karaites, or because they're worried about chometz, etc. Ela afilu kazayis rishon b'leil Pesach, but even when it comes to the main kazayis on Seder night, gam ken yesh makom liftor, you can also halachically find a way to exempt celiac people from eating any matzah, even though it's not life threatening. Im ze'alu ligrom gam ken nezek l'chole afilu shelo yagi l'day sekona, even if they're not going to get life threateningly ill, if it's going to make them ill, they don't have to eat, he says. Who could imagine Shaala? Because those would say the binyan Shlomo, lagan Rosh Shlomo Hakohen, zichron libracha. He quotes the binyan Shlomo miVilna. The im margish acholei she'efsha shiyaziklo. If the cholei feels that he's going to get sick, im yoichal akazayis matzah. If he eats this kazayis matzah tomorrow, as I ain't a rishai la'achmir al atzmo. He's not allowed to eat it. Not that he doesn't have to. He's not allowed to eat it because you shouldn't make yourself sick. Because if the doctor says this is the case, even if he's not going to get life-threateningly sick, he doesn't have to eat matzah. And he says, I've seen other people that say this, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, he brings Rav Avad Yosef, and he brings others as well. And therefore, interestingly, he rules that even if the celiac will not become life-threateningly sick, he doesn't have to, he or she does not have to eat matzah on Seder night, which is very interesting, because even though this is a very important mitzvah, since a person's health is more important than their money, then he says that is the halachi situation. He says at the end that if they want to, they can still make a brocha, because you are allowed to make a brocha on food that will make you sick. You're not allowed to make a brocha on food that will kill you, God forbid, that you can't. Maybe it's called brocha achrona. You don't have to make a brocha on food that will to make a brocha on food that will make you sick. Let's say a diabetic is not eating the right kind of food, if you eat food which is too sugary, so even though that really is quite dangerous, they are allowed to make a brocha. Or if you eat food that's going to make you overweight, you are allowed to make a brocha on that, even though it's not in your long-term interest. So the Tzitz Eliezer and other poskim, many contemporary poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Rav Gedalia Yudal Schwartz, Rav Osher Weiss, all paskim that if the doctors really tell the celiac that if you eat this, it'll cause long-term damage to your digestive system, then they don't have to eat matzah on Seder night. Now, other poskim are more machmir. Some say, well, one second, where did we learn this from? We learned it from the one-fifth money rule. So the Eish el Avraham says, well, then that's the rule. There's no automatic exemption. You have to ask yourself, would you be prepared to give away one-fifth of your life savings, okay, in order to do this mitzvah? And if the answer is no, then you're being a hypocrite. And really, then the money is more important than your health, and therefore you better eat the matzah and get sick. Because you're really not in that category, which actually makes a lot of sense, even though, as I said, most poskim are not strict in that way. And I think when push comes to shove, even if people are going to say, oh, I'm not going to eat, it makes me sick, if he says, well, you have $100,000 of savings, would you give $20,000 to do this mitzvah? Oh, that's a different question. Yes.
If you eat the matzah and then throw it up, does that count for
them? That's a very interesting shaila, which I'm not getting into right now, but one of my Rosh Yeshiva once said to me, he gets a knock on the door every Seder night, sometime around 11:30, a knock on the door, and he says, it's not Eliyahu Novi, it's some distressed wife coming up from someone's Seder saying, my husband just drank an enormous reverse of wine and ate a kazais of matzah this big, and now he's, God forbid, you know, thrown it all up, and he wants to know two things. Does he have to eat matzah again, and does he have to bench? So I'm not getting into those shilas, but they're not uncommon shilas. So some poskim are stricter. Some poskim are stricter and say, if it makes you sick, okay, you have to eat it. Maybe even if you would give your money away, and I brought those at the top. But most poskim say not, and it's pretty much a consensus of modern-day contemporary poskim. What about rabbinic mitzvahs? Just in parentheses, to what extent do you have to make yourself ill in order to do a rabbinic mitzvah? And the answer here is, the Shulchan Aruch rules in number 18, Yesham Rim Dechol Isurei Hanom Mid Rabbonon. Anything which is prohibited to benefit from on a rabbinic level, mutar lehitrapot bahem. You are allowed to use them to make yourself better. Even if it's not life-threatening, even if you're just regular sick, which is not life-threatening. Meaning, he paskens that if you have to do a rabbinic aveira to get better, or if you avoid doing a rabbinic mitzvah to avoid getting sick, that's okay. Then he says, you do it. You have to get the doctor to say it's real. You can't just be a hypochondriac and say, I'm not going to do the mitzvah, or al pi mumcha. You have to have some expert opinion. But once you get that expert opinion, you don't have to do a rabbinic mitzvah if it makes you sick. Which actually is a very interesting question for people, the celiac on Shabbos, when there's a rabbinic mitzvah of only Shabbos to eat bread. The truth is maybe even only Shabbos doesn't require you to eat bread, it requires you to eat what you enjoy on Shabbos. But even all of those mitzvot, the Kiddush for Makom Suda, etc., if it's going to make you ill, all the poskim really will say you don't have to do it if it's rabbinic. The problem with that is the Gemara in Nedarim in number 19. Amra hahi matronita. This Roman woman said, to Rabbi Yehuda one day. Rabbi Yehuda had a very red complexion. She said to him, Moira the Rabbi, you're paskening halacha when you're drunk. You've been drinking. I can see from your face you've been drinking. And Amala, he responded to her and said, no. Okay, I swear by the worthiness of this woman. The only wine I ever drink is Kiddush and Havdalah. The Arbakosi de Pitcha and Arbakosi on Pesach. And the Chagrani Tzadi Mina Pesach Adat Seres. And the headache that I get from the Arbakosis lasts from Pesach through till Shavuos. I have to bandage my head. Rashi explains, Kosher Ani Tzadi Padachti. I have to bandage up my temples, Mishum Michush Roshi, because of the headache. Mipnei Dalet Kosher Shishatiti, because I have to drink these four cups. Now, the question is, why is he drinking four cups of wine if it makes him sick? Four cups of wine is a rabbinic mitzvah. He should just say, well, come on, a seven-week headache. I don't have to do a rabbinic mitzvah for a seven-week headache. It sounds like he did. And actually, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins number 20, Misha Eino Shoyte Yain, someone who normally doesn't drink wine, Mipnei Shemaziko, because it damages him, also not because they just don't like wine, Tzarech Litchok Atzmo, they have to push themselves. V'lishtod l'kai mitzvah sarbakos, they have to drink four cups. Now, what's in 1 second? So, how does this fit? So, the Mishnah Berurah clarifies that, no. If you're really going to get sick to the point you're going to get ill, you're going to have to take to your bed. You're going to become non-functional in some way. Let's say someone got a migraine, which lasted so long that they would just stop them working. So that, for sure, you don't have to do. But this Rabbi Yehuda, he had a headache. You can live with a headache. So he had a headache. So he had to do it. So he says that's the distinction between a michush, which you can live with and you can function with, and something where you, if your boss said, are you feeling okay, you'd say, no, I really have to go home, I don't feel well. Question?
Yeah, what about a recovering alcoholic?
Oh yeah, a recovering alcoholic, that definitely would not have to drink alcohol. There's no question about that at all, because that is a very serious problem. That's not a michush. That they have to absolutely not drink alcohol. I've had recovering alcoholics at my Shabbos table, and absolutely, they should drink grape juice.
Grape juice there too.
Yeah, absolutely, depending on what medication on, yes.
Was there grape juice in those?
No, there was never any grape juice.
So grape juice would be fine for such a person.
Yes, it would now, although we know for sure that there was never grape juice. Why was there never grape juice? Because there's no grapes in April. So that's why there was no grape juice. The only grape juice lasts for a few days without refrigeration and without sulfites. And in April, for Pesach, there's no one got any grapes anywhere to squeeze them into anything. And therefore, grape juice is a modern invention. But they had other alternatives. Chamer Medina, they could drink whatever. There were other alternatives. So, la halacha for rabbinic mitzvahs, if you're really going to get ill, then you definitely don't need to do them. But if you're just going to have a headache, and you'll have to work out how sick is sick and how well you function, I'm not getting into all of that now. Because let's go into the Oath Matzah saga. Because that's really what I want to spend 10 minutes on. Because in 1985, Rabbi Ephraim Kestenbaum, who some of you in this room for sure will know, was confronted by his little girl, who said to him, I'm very upset because I'll be bat mitzvah in a few years. She was celiac, which in those days in the 1980s was not so common. She said, I won't be able to eat matzah. What can I do? So Rabbi Kestenbaum, who was an industrial chemist, he said, let's see if we can find a solution for you. And what he did basically is as follows. Turn to page 6. He teamed up with Diane Osher-Vestheim in Manchester, and they said, let's find oats which are gluten-free and make oat matzah. Now, what's the deal with oats? Oats do not have gluten in them. They have a parallel protein which is called avenin. And avenin does not affect celiacs in the same way that gluten does. 95% of celiacs can assimilate avenins and can therefore eat oats. However, there is a problem that oats are often contaminated by gluten for various reasons. Either because they've been grown in fields where there's crop rotation, and if there's wheat and barley DNA, as it were, in the soil, that can get into the oats and contaminated with gluten. Or because they're just simply contaminated in the processing and packaging, and therefore many celiacs will not eat oats because they say they found that they've reacted to them because of the contamination. But in principle, there is such a thing as a totally gluten-free oat. Rabbi Kestenbaum did tests in France, in Italy, in Israel, in England, and in America, and could not find a 100% gluten-free oat. He found, eventually, in Scotland, that's where to go for your oats, a very small patch of land of oats which were 100% gluten-free, and he said, that's it, we're going to breed those oats, we're going to take them, we're going to grow them, and we're going to make oat masses 100% gluten-free. And that's what he did. He harvested them, which is no easy matter, because for matzah, you have to make sure that the oats are not wet in any way. Therefore, he had to wait in Scotland until it hadn't rained for 5 days, which in Scotland is quite impossible, and harvest the oats in August. Then he brought them down to Manchester, where they were ground and milled, and then took the flour down to London, where he hand-baked oat matzahs. This was in the 1980s. And this turned into quite a significant business. And as anyone knows who's eaten Kestenbaum's oat matzahs, until a few years ago anyway, when other companies really took over the market, this was the yellow box, if you remember it. This was the oat matzah that people used to have. But it's not so straightforward, because oats don't taste very good. They're very, very bitter. What oat manufacturers normally do is they steam treat them when they harvest them, and that takes away the bitter taste. Now, obviously, steam-treating oats and then making matzahs from them is a bit of an own goal, because you've just turned them into chometz before you ever did anything, so that's not possible. So Rabbi Kestenbaum decided he was going to find an alternative system, so he heated them and pounded them and managed to make them taste a little bit less bitter by doing that. Now, that itself is not totally unproblematic. We'll see the heating process is not so posh either. But he produced these oats, and they became, as I said, very popular. Since then, a number of other companies have taken on making oat matzahs, and there are now various different hechsherim on oat matzahs, including Bedat Seder Haredis, etc. This seems like a perfect solution. What could be wrong? Oats are one of the five grains. Oat matzahs are gluten-free. Everybody's happy. Nobody needs to get sick. There is a problem. In fact, there are three problems. Let's look at those three problems. The first is, are we allowed to eat non-wheat matzah on Seder night? Or do we have to eat wheat matzah? So look at number 22. The Mishnah says, Eilu devarim she'adam yotze behem yidei chavasa. But Pesach, these are the things you can eat on Pesach for matzah. Chitim, which is wheat, b'se'orim, barley. Everyone agrees on wheat and barley. There's no machlokas. And then b'kutmin, b'shifon, and b'shibolit shua. Kutmin is rye, is spelt. Shifon is rye, and shibolit shuel is oats. That's how they're normally translated. Although those last three, there is some level of discussion, especially on oats. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens this. Number 23, Ela devarim sheyotzim behem yidei chavasa b'chavas matzah, b'chitim, b'tzorim, b'kutmin, b'shibolit shuel, b'shifon. You have five options, including oats, it seems, to make your matzahs from. Says the Ramah, the haminhag, the minhag is, likach lechatchila chitim, to take ideally wheat, not any of the others. Avaloba orez, v'shamini, you can't make it from rice, etc. You get into a whole kidneys issue, which I'm not getting into now. So the Ramah brings that there is a minhag not to use any other of the five grains apart from wheat. Why? Why is there a minhag? What kind of minhag is this? So the Mishnah Berurah says in 24, the minhag is, Mishum dahu chavit la'adam, because most people like the taste of wheat matzah more than any other, and that's probably still true. But yaitse, ve'ikah mishum hidur mitzvah, and therefore it's a hidur mitzvah. Ve'im ein lo chitim, yikach le matzah, me'echad me'adalat minim, but if you can't, for whatever reason, eat wheat, of course you can have the others. So, if that's the case, we don't have a problem. Because this minhag to eat wheat is only because wheat is tasty, is normal, but you can certainly eat the others if you need to, and therefore if that's the reason for the minhag, then there's no problem at all. However, The Maharsham says, no, that's not the reason for the minhag. I'll tell you another reason for the minhag. The minhag is that matzahs are very hard to produce. You have to be very careful, and there's all sorts of dangers of them becoming chometz along the way. With wheat, we know what we're doing, because we've had thousands of years of experience making wheat matzahs. But with oats, with spelt, I'm not sure we know exactly. We're worried that we might not produce them in exactly the right way, and they might become chometz. And I brought you on the top of page 7 a piece, which I'm not going to read in detail now, from the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak, who was Yitzchak Weiss, yes, also from Manchester, who came to the Eidecha Redis. He writes here, he has a question, in Mutal Afois Masters Mishar Mine Dagan Loy Michitim. La Elisha Enu Yicholim La Echol Hanesim Michitim. So can you make other kinds of grain matzah other than wheat matzah? And he goes on in this paragraph to say, no, I don't think you can. Even b'dieved, I don't think you can, because we just don't know what we're doing. We're worried that they may become chometz. We don't have the background. We don't have the history. And therefore, he says, even b'dieved, I'm not prepared to allow any other mitzvah than wheat matzah. And he says at the end, look at this last two lines, uledati, and my view is, lo shkia chole kazeh. There really isn't such a thing as a chole, an ill person, asher lo yuchal echol af pam achat v'shana kezayis matzah mechitzin. Is there such a person that really can't have one matzah, one kezayis of matzah made from wheat? And therefore he says, I don't think there's any other option. Now, Rabbi Kestenbaum, one second, call him and says to him, I can assure you there are people who indeed cannot have a kezayis even once a year of wheat. And Rabbi Kestenbaum reports that Diane White said, okay, well, in that case, they can eat oat matzah. Okay? Yes.
I know you said you're going to talk about the Zayas and Jesus, but give us an idea now, according to a box of matzah, what is a kazayas?
No, you're going to have to come back next week, I'm sorry. Because it's the whole shir. I'm not going into it now. Sorry, I'm going to resist the temptation. You're going to have to come back, sorry, next week, and then I can give you next Wednesday. Now, once, yes sir. Ashkenazim don't eat oatmeal.
They
can eat oat matzah. The trouble is, there isn't any other oat products apart from oat matzahs, which are kosher lepesah. Obviously, oatmeal is chometz. Yes.
Wasn't there a time when we didn't have thousands of years of experience?
Yes, there was a time, but we've been making matzahs for a long time. I don't think anyone really has access to what anyone did at that time. No, it wasn't a problem. And the truth is that Diane Weiss here says, ultimately, if you have to, you have to, and it's possible. He just doesn't like it. So that's one reason why we might not be able to have oat matzahs, because the minhag is to have wheat. Why is there a minhag to have wheat? Either because we prefer wheat, in which case, fine. Here it's not a question of preference, you have to, good. Or because we don't know what we're doing with other crops other than wheat, in which case, really we shouldn't, but maybe in this case when we have no option, then we can rely on that. But the main problem is, I really need to get into this because I only have 10 minutes, is shibolet shul really oats? That's the main problem here. We're all assuming that oats really is what we think the Mishnah is talking about, and that is not poshim. I want to take you on a magical mystery tour just for 5 minutes into the botany of oats. The Mishnah says, number 26, Chamisha dvarim chayvim b'chala. 5 things are obligated in chala. Chitim, sa'orim, kusmin, shibolet shul, v'shifon. Fine, that we know. And the Yerushalmi basically says, the same is true not just for chala, but also for matzah. Chala, I mean here, taking chala, the mitzvah of taking chala. The same 5 things, the same 5 species that are kosher for taking chala are also relevant for eating matzah. And it lists these 5 things again, including shibolet shul. Everything else, look at the last line of 27, shar kol advarim, any other species, eino baim lidei matzah, the chomet. You can't make chomet out of other things, ela lidei sira chom. They just go rancid. If you try to make chomet, if you have to make dough from rice, and get it to rise and turn into nice rice bread, it doesn't. It just goes flat, and it goes off, and it doesn't taste nice at all. These 5 minim are the only ones that turn into chomet, nice fluffy bread and matzah, in, as it were, on Pesach. Good, shibolet shul. What is shibolet shul? Says Rashi number 28. Shibolet shul is avina. Avina. What's avina? Aven. Aven is oats. The Latin genus for oats is avena. The modern French word for oats is avoine. And that clearly is what Rashi is talking about. Oats. And he says, Shibolet Shul, Shibolet Shela, because the ear of the corn, Asui Kazanav Shu'al. Looks like a fox tail. That's why it's called Shibolet Shu'al, because it looks like a fox tail, says Rashi, and it's oats. Rabbeinu Gershom, who is even earlier than Rashi, agrees. Number 29, Shibolet Ta'ala, fox tails as it were, Avina. Avina is clearly oats. However, the Oruch, which was a Talmudic dictionary from Italy in the 13th century, in the 11th century, excuse me, he says two ideas here. Number 30. In his dictionary he writes, Shin, Vet, Lamed. How is he defining this? Then in brackets it says, Hafer, which is a modern German word, which is the Yiddish word for oats. He gives two understandings. He brings the Gemara, Bekusmin b'shibolet shuel, Perush, Sikala. First he says Sikala, V'yeshamnim, Vina. Or maybe it's Vina. So what, Vina is Avina, what we said before, which is oats. What's Sikala? So Sikala is rye. Sikala is rye. In Latin, Sikala is the genus for rye. In modern Italian, segale, in French, sigla. And therefore, it sounds like the Oruch understands Shibolet Shual is not oats at all. It's something else, some kind of barley, some kind of rye. Rambam, no lesser than the Rambam in 31, Shibolet Shual, he says, Sin, I'm not going to pronounce this right in Arabic, I apologize if anyone's listening to this shir who speaks Arabic, that's not my thing. Sinbal atlab, something like that, which is actually the fox's spike. He says that's what it is. Vehi has sa'ora amidbarit. Wild barley. It's wild barley. That's Shibolet Shual. That says the Rambam. So now we've got a bit of a problem. Because even though Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom say that Shibolet Shual is oats, the Oruch says, at least according to one opinion, that it's some kind of barley or rye. And the Rambam says it's some kind of barley or rye. And there are others as well. There's someone called Rabbeinu Nachman Abba Yeshiva, a very early parish on the Mishnah, that says it's really barley, not oats. How do we know what Shibolet Shual really is? Well, I'm afraid to say that the evidence is not that good in favor of oats. I brought you here some pictures of all of these things. Here you have five grains on the right-hand side. You have oats in the middle, avena. You see that in the box? And then on the left you have this sikali, which is this wild barley. So let's have a look at the evidence. Number one, Rashi says that oats, or Shibolet Shual rather, looks like the tail of a fox. Well, sikali does look a bit like the tail of a fox, but oats don't really look like a foxtail very much. Lots of the other grains do, but oats really doesn't. We saw rice can't become chametz because it doesn't rise. It just flops. It doesn't have the right protein in it. It doesn't have the gluten in it. Well, oats also doesn't. When you try to make bread out of oats, oats does what rice does and starts to rise, but then flops. It seems to do the same thing because it doesn't have gluten in it. That's the problem. Gluten traps the air bubbles and causes the bread to rise. Oats seems more like rice than it does like wheat and barley. So too, the Gemara says that Shibolet Shual in 32 is a min sa'orim. It says it's a subspecies of barley. Well, oats is not a subspecies of barley. It also says that barley and oats can crossbreed. Well, or Shibolet Shual rather can crossbreed. Well, barley and oats can't crossbreed. Also, the Yerushalmi says that Shibolet Shual grows straight and in a row. Well, oats doesn't grow straight, and it doesn't grow in a row. So, you know, when you add all this up, it's not looking too good for oats to be one of the five grains. And in fact, Professor Yehuda Felix, who is one of the leading experts on botany, flora, and fauna from the Tanakh, from the Mishnah, etc., clearly came out and said, according to his research, oats are not Shibolet Shual. And he said, he brought other evidence as well, if you just turn to page 9, I brought you here in number 35, other evidence he brought. He said that he claimed that from archaeology, the oats were not naturally growing in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Mishnah. Other academics dispute this. And he brings different kinds of evidence, and I brought you here different people who say different things on this issue. Well, when Professor Felix came out with this, there was a great deal of consternation. Because the Masorah of the last many, many hundred years, going back to Rashi Rabbeinu Gershom, is that Shibolet Shual really is oats. When Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach heard what Professor Felix said, he was very unhappy. He writes that in Hilichos Shlomo, and this is really a meta-halachic issue, which is, how do we paskin halacha? Based on academic research or based on Masorah? And that raises a very interesting discussion in and of itself. On the other hand, there are lots of hands here, it's not just academic research. It's also the Rambam, it's also the Aruch, Rabbeinu Nathan Avi Yeshiva. There really is a machlokas about this. But almost all contemporary poskim conclude that oats really is shibolet shual, and therefore most people will say that you can definitely have oat matzah. Now there are people who are machmir in both directions, meaning no posek will say that oats is definitely not shibolet shual, meaning no one's going to allow you to have oatmeal porridge on matzah and say, well, fine, I mean, oats are probably not chometz anyway because they're not one of the five. No one's going to do that, absolutely not. But there are people who are machmir also on Seder night, and they really don't want you to eat oat matzah. Rav Herschel Schechter is machmir for this opinion that oat matzah may not indeed be kosher for matzahs on Seder night. And the question is, can you make a bracha on it, etc.? When I called up the oat matzah manufacturers to order my oat matzahs for Pesach, on the message it said, anyone who can eat spelt matzah should eat spelt matzah and not eat oat matzah. They had that on their recorded message on the phone line, I assume for this reason, because spelt, pretty much everyone agrees, is fine. Oats is this interesting shiloh. By the way, Rabbi Felix, or Professor Felix, said that also horseradish was not maror either. Now, really got people upset because, you know, you can't have maror without horseradish, but he didn't agree with that either. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, in number 36, he does take this view very seriously, this idea that maybe oats are not shibolet shual, and therefore he talks there about Quaker. The Israelis call it kvaker. Okay, he talks here about Quaker that may not really be shibolet shuel and therefore may not be valid on Seder night. So that's the second reason why oat matzahs might not be a problem. It might not be okay because oats may not be one of the five grades. A third reason, which I'll summarize very quickly, is in order to be kosher for matzah, the thing you're eating has to have the potential to be chometz, and we learn that from various sources. The problem with the oat matzahs originally was the heat treatment that Rabbi Kestenbaum made to the matzahs in order to make them taste better. That effectively removes any possibility of them ever being able to become chometz. And therefore the question is, does this now invalidate these oat matzahs? Because these matzahs could never have been chometz. Which is very, you know, reassuring in terms of I don't want to eat chometz, but I want to have matzah which could have become chometz. So that itself is a machlokas rishonim. The Rambam holds that, no, it's the species. I don't care if this particular matzah could never have become chometz. In fact, he rules that matzah kneaded with fruit juice, which cannot become chometz, is still good for Seder night. He holds that's not matzah ashira. That's a whole different discussion, which is not for now. He says as long as the species can, in principle, become chometz, you're good, even if this piece can't. So that's fine. The Rambam holds, no, it has to be this specific piece of matzah that could have become chometz but didn't, and therefore that's not fine. Lemaisa lahalocha, most of the poskim are machmir, but some are mekel. But it's not so relevant now anyway because Lakewood started making oat matzahs which are not heat treated, and most of the matzahs today are not heat treated, so that problem goes away. So, bottom line, can our celiac eat oat matzahs? Well, you may argue, well, there's nothing to be lost, is there? Meaning, if it's matzah, then good. If it's not matzah, then it's not matzah. As long as it's kosher lePesach, it's just like eating anything else. The only question is whether they can make a brocha al achilas matzah. Most poskim conclude, indeed, that they can eat oat matzahs. The Eidah Charedis gives a hechsher to oat matzahs, and therefore that is a solution. The last two solutions in the last 30 seconds, one of them is not practical at all, but it's possible theoretically, which is, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you mix wheat flour with rice flour, you can even have a very, very small proportion of wheat flour and a large proportion of rice flour, and it's still kosher for matzahs on Seder night. So maybe for someone who was able to assimilate a little bit of wheat, they could concoct some kind of a matzah which was maybe even 90% rice flour and only 10% wheat flour, and that might be okay. The only problem with this is you can't buy matzahs like that. And I wouldn't recommend trying to make them at home. They'll probably be chometz before you turn around. And therefore, that's not really practical. And you're assuming that you know what orez is, that that's rice, but it might not be, which is another shear in and of itself. The last solution, which is really next week's shir, and I apologize that I didn't give it this week, but I have to give it next week, is, okay, so just have the tiniest kazayis you possibly can, and that's good. How big is the tiniest kazayis you possibly can have? That we need to talk about, Be'ezras Hashem, next week. So we'll leave it there, and we'll move forward. Have a wonderful week.